This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man. Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Want to see your loan options, adjust payments and closing costs online in real time? Well, Rocket can. Coming up a half hour from now, lots of coaching changes around college basketball. Chris Beard taking the Texas job and leaving Texas Tech in the lurch. Roy Williams retiring after a Hall of Fame career at UNC. Who's next in Chapel Hill? We'll talk to Jeff Goodman, college basketball insider for Stadium Sports, coming up in a half hour. Plus, get his thoughts on the Final Four tomorrow and a potential national championship game on Monday night. We'll do that coming up here on the show in about 30 minutes. Also later on in the hour here on the program on a Target Demo Friday as a reminder. So let us know where you are, how you're listening, and how you watched opening day in baseball yesterday by tweeting at me, DA on CBS, or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheDAShow. We already have a Tom Brady rule. Can't hit below the knee. Will we have a Tom Brady 2 in terms of the rule book? The Rams want one. We'll tell you why coming up here on the show in about 45 minutes from now. But let's start from an ownership standpoint in the NFL. In Charger land, more drama. This is from the Associated Press. The sister of Chargers controlling owner Dean Spanos is petitioning a California court to put one-third of the team's ownership stake up for sale. Dia Spanos Berberian filed a petition yesterday in L.A. County Superior Court, contending that mounting debt from the franchise is creating an estimated yearly loss of at least $11 million for the family trust. According to the petition, the trust had debts and expenses of $353 million as of September 30th. The filing includes a letter in which Dean Spanos said he would hire an investment bank that would allow any member of the family to sell his or her take. Berberian says in the petition that would be too long. So Dean Spanos has a letter that said he would hire an investment bank that would allow any of the members to sell their stake. So what you have here is another family squabble over ownership, over finances, over control. This has happened very ugly in New Orleans with the Saints upon Tom Benson's death. This has happened very ugly in Denver with the Boland family also fighting over ownership. Now, it certainly doesn't get top billing nationally to talk about ownership changes. It gets a lot of run locally, but not nationally. And so you might not be aware of the ugliness of the Benson family or the ugliness of the Bolin family, but it has been there. And it is not a helpful situation when you are trying to build a winner, because you have a lot of different hands in the pot and you have a lot of different legal pushings and pullings, litigation happening, controlling stake arguments, and a lack of direction, a lack of uniformity. The owner wants this, but maybe some of the owner's family doesn't want that. And so you have this GM asking for this from this ownership or this part of the family in terms of finances. We want to spend this. We want to do that. And it just, at the end of the day, becomes really complicated. And for a Chargers franchise that's already really struggling to have a footprint in Los Angeles, this is a problem. This is a real problem. The Chargers already were the unwanted guest in Los Angeles. They basically went because they couldn't get a new stadium built in San Diego and got a sweetheart deal from the Rams. But there's also a monster relocation fee that they still have to pay out for moving to LA. That's no chump change. Last year, they had no fans in attendance. So that's a huge hurt in their team revenue. Of course, for NFL teams, you're making tons of money on nationally negotiated television contracts. That won't slow anytime soon, but it is still a problem if you are the Chargers and you're trying to get your head above water in a stadium that hasn't had fans and you have to pay a pretty huge relocation fee and you're the second team in town in which most people yawn over your existence. It's a real issue. I think for the Chargers, who have constantly felt kind of in limbo since they moved there, they were playing in a soccer stadium, it was mostly road fans, and now moving into SoFi Stadium, which is clearly the Ram Stadium, and you're just kind of renting it. The Chargers are going to be in a real painful place here with this family squabble. It's not going to go away. Believe me, this stuff doesn't go away because there's too much money at stake. If you are part of the ownership or part of the family and you are willing to buck the family, then you can make things a living hell. And remember that the Spanos family has never been one of the wealthier families in the NFL. It's not a family like Jerry Jones, which made hundreds of millions of dollars in business interests. The Spanos family's business interest is football. And they've always been very cheap in spending their money. Now they've opened up the purse strings recently. They've signed some of their guys to big deals. They have a new head coach, and Justin Herbert looks like the real deal. So the Chargers absolutely have talent on the field to be able to get some movement and hopefully win over some fans. But that's also not an overnight thing. I think if you're keen on what happened in New Orleans and keen on what happened in Denver, you know this could be really ugly and it could drag out for a long time. And for a franchise that's already struggling to get a foothold in Los Angeles and dealing with the fallout financially over COVID and not having fans in attendance last year and will likely have limited fans this year, especially in the state of California, this is bad news. It's bad news. It's really bad news. And again, the Chargers have never been the best run franchise as it is. But to know now that there's going to be some type of family strife of ownership that may or may not force a selling or a buying or something is not going to be good. It's not going to be good for the product. It's not going to be good for the fans. I think the one thing that might be a good thing coming out of this is if you sell the franchise, is there the chance that the new owner wants to move it back to San Diego? I mean, that to me would be amazing. I would find that to be the ultimate benefit of all of this. But that's many years down the road, and that's a huge if. You know, people have connected Jeff Bezos to every franchise. If Bezos buys the Chargers, my guess is Bezos doesn't want a franchise in San Diego. He wants a franchise in Los Angeles. Now, there are some that hope that there's a local investor in San Diego that would move them back. But again, you know, that's a very big if. That's if the franchise is sold and if he ends up, or whoever the group is, ends up being the winning bid. And that's if the NFL even wants the team back in San Diego. They might want the team in Los Angeles because it seemed like they always wanted two teams in L.A. But this is not going to go away anytime soon, and it certainly is something to keep an eye on, as the Spanos family apparently has some defectors and now has some courtroom drama petitioning a California court, the sister of Dean Spanos, to put a third of the team's ownership stake up for sale. And what does that mean? Does it just mean that Dean Spanos is going to come up with the $850 million to buy out that stake, or is there something bigger at play here? It'll be very interesting to see. 855-212-4CBS is that phone number, 855-212-4227, or on Twitter, DA on CBS. Yesterday, opening day around Major League Baseball, the crazy play in Los Angeles where it looked like Bellinger hits a home run, but Justin Turner doesn't see it go over the wall, and so he doubles back to make sure he gets back to first base. Meantime, it's actually a home run, and he's called out because he passed the runner. No home run. You had Miguel Cabrera lose the home run in the snowstorm in Detroit yesterday and didn't know it went over the fence, and so he slides into second base in a snowstorm. Mraz gets a near concussion after a sign falls off of Bob's bar from a big wind gust and hits him on the head. Has light sensitivity the rest of the day. Nearly calls out sick today. Mraz, as you watch yesterday's opening day, a Yankees loss to the Blue Jays. What was the vibe? Just happy to have baseball back and some fans in attendance, or Giancarlo Stanton, here we go again. The Boo Birds are out of the Bronx.
Mixed bag. Number one, opening day felt like opening day. It was great to see fans in the park. It really was. As scattered as they were, even throughout Major League Baseball, it was just great to see fans in the stadium tapping on walls and having a good time. And that vibe of baseball felt back. On the flip, I think the anger and angst was there. If I was at the stadium, I would boo Giancarlo. I was ticked off. The guy had three strikeouts. That annoyed me. But really, D.A., what annoyed me, I think, the most on opening day, and this really came into play with the Yankee game, it came into play with the Phillies and the Braves as well, I can't believe we're still doing this runner on second in the 10th inning. I thought that was an idea of last year. We're trying to get the teams out of the ballparks quicker. And maybe I just totally spaced, and there was so much going on with March Madness that I really wasn't as tapped into spring training. I knew that we weren't getting the pitcher hitting. I, for some reason, thought we weren't doing this runner on second, or maybe we were waiting a couple innings and extra innings to doing it. But having that affect games for a 162-game regular season already on opening day really blew my mind and, frankly, ticked me off a little bit.
So you don't like that rule?
I like that rule, but to an extent. Like, I think that you should wait, whether it's the 11th, 12th. I don't like the idea that coming right out the chute after playing nine innings – that we're doing this in the 10th. I understand the purpose, and I understand yesterday we had that conversation about pace of play and getting these games done quicker. But it just seems a little to me that the basis behind implementing that rule last year was we want teams not being in the park as long. There's no fans there. And we just do that this year in the 10th inning already. We don't even have a fair shot at a real extra inning before we implement that. I mean, the NHL doesn't go right to the shootout. They at least give you an overtime before said shootout. I'm not a fan of it right away.
So if it was a 10th inning normal, 11th inning runner on second, you'd be okay with it?
I think I would be, yes. Because I do realize last year I did like the fact that games eventually ended. But I think you at least need to keep the real game of baseball in play for at least one inning in extra innings and see if a chance for the game to end in at least one of these frames.
Well, it's an interesting observation because yesterday we had four extra inning games and all of them ended in the 10th. So
yes,
None of them went beyond the 10th. So it actually worked to baseball's favor. They want to end games quicker. They wanted to do this last year because of all of the COVID situations. They didn't want to keep burning through pitchers when there was already such duress placed on rosters and who was healthy scratches, who was COVID scratches, etc. I like this, though, because I think that once you get through nine innings, you want to wrap this bad boy up and you don't want to keep going. If it was the 10th as a normal extra inning and the 11th that we start this, I'd be okay with it. But, you know, it's a little bit just delaying the inevitable. You had nine innings to finish, to figure out the outcome, and you didn't. I think it's good because I just don't think you want 12 and 13 and 14 inning games to decide anything because, again, these pitchers, I mean, they're treated like they're China dolls. And so I just don't think that you want to be having to wait and force five relievers through a 13 inning game. And then the next day you have to throw out your entire B squad because of what happened. I think that this actually could lead to better baseball so that you're protecting pitchers' arms and everybody's getting wrapped up in the 10th inning.
Totally fine. But as you point out, pace of play, we used to have 2.5 hour games. If you could figure out a way with pitch clocks and all these sensible stuff within the game to not alter the game, then maybe when you're playing 12, 13 innings, the games are then only 3:15, 3.5, something like that. It just feels like there were so many other ways to alter baseball and speed it up that totally changing the way the game is played in a 10th inning to me is a little wild.
I do think that baseball is going to have to tackle these types of issues and make it uncomfortable. I think that, yeah, pitch clock is a really good one, but this one was a start of wrapping things up quickly and getting some action in extras to win. You've already got a runner on second base, which has at times felt like a Herculean task in baseball. So I think this is the start of how we're going to see some uncomfortable transitions in baseball because of what we talked about yesterday. When we come back here on the show, Jeff Goodman's going to join us. We'll talk about the coaching change at UNC, who's next in Chapel Hill, and the Final Four is set for tomorrow. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Mornings are hard. Your sports radio show doesn't have to be.
Sound check, and that includes Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker.
You all right?
Dude, it's Kemba Walker, dude. You had it right the first time, DA. Kemba Walker.
Go Walker.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
We appreciate you being with us on a fine Friday morning, everybody. You can watch us at watchda.com. That's where we have the simulcast cooking. That's mobile friendly. Watch the show at watchda.com. Also on Twitch. And on Twitch, you can chat alongside other D-Aliens. Go to our CBS Sports Radio channel there and watch the simulcast as the Wizard of Watch DA is pressing buttons and pulling levers and making it sing live and sparkling Technicolor. We will have Jeff Goodman join us here on the show from Stadium Sports, College Basketball Insider, coming up here in about 8 minutes from now. We will preview the Final Four. We've got an all-Texas match, but an all-West Coast matchup. UCLA takes on Gonzaga in the 11-1. We have the Houston-Baylor matchup in the 2-1. Coming up tomorrow, and then Monday night is the national championship game. Assuming that all three games are played, we will have accomplished the NCAA tournament with only one cancellation. That was VCU that had to forfeit in the first round and thus sending Oregon into the second round without actually beating anybody. But if we get through the NCAA tournament, only one game forfeited, I would say that is a big W. Plus, in UNC land, they're wondering who the next head coach of the Tar Heels will be as Roy Williams retires after three national championships yesterday in a Hall of Fame career. We'll talk to Jeff about who's the leading candidate to get that job coming up here on the show at 30 minutes past the hour. But standing by right now with our headlines is a kind sir. His name is Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogeyman, good morning.
DA, good morning again. As it should be, most of the action on opening day was during the day. Just a handful of evening affairs. The Mariners trailed the Giants 6-1, led 7-6, a lot of solo homer top nine, then won 8-7-10 on the always fun bases loaded walk. The Angels scored twice in the eighth to beat the White Sox 4-3, and the Astros won in Oakland 8-1, Zach Greinke tossing six shutout frames. There was supposed to be a Mets-Nationals game in D.C. last night, but the Nats are now on three COVID positives. These two may begin their seasons tomorrow. In the afternoon, the Cardinal offense could not have started better.
The pitch is swung on, and there's a high fly ball. That's hit deep right field, and it's a goner for Carlson. Dylan Carlson with a three-run homer, 6-0 Cardinals in the first inning.
John Rooney on Cardinals radio. Dylan Carlson capping off that six-run first, which became an 11-7 win in Cincinnati. The Nets didn't have James Harden last night because of a tight hamstring, but they did, for the first time, have LaMarcus Aldridge.
Johnson gives for Luau Cabarro, tosses it for Aldridge, puts up a three, and he's got it! LaMarcus Aldridge, welcome to Brooklyn. He hits a three to make it 40-16.
That is Bob Uesler on WFAN. Aldridge and the Nets jumping on the Hornets, cruising to a 111-89 victory. Aldridge had 11 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists.
These guys play so well, you know, off the ball, moving the ball, you know, just sharing it. So it was easy for me. So, you know, I had fun tonight for sure.
The Nets have won 20 of 23. They remain just ahead of Philly atop the East. The Sixers a 114-94 win in Cleveland. The Nuggets beat the Clippers in L.A. 101-94. The Hawks a 134-129 double OT win in San Antonio. And the Heat beat the Warriors 116-109. Jimmy Butler 22 points, 6 rebounds, 8 assists, and 4 steals. The Lakers reportedly optimistic that Andre Drummond will miss only a game or two after losing a toenail 2 nights ago. The NFL yesterday released the list of possible rule changes for this offseason. There's a couple of tweaks to overtime and the addition of an 8th off-field official who have access to TV monitors could help the on-field crew make calls without review. This all goes to the owners. 24 yes votes are needed to put any of these into play. And in the NHL last night, Nashville's 6-game win streak ended 4-1 to Dallas. The Penguins beat the Bruins 4-1. That's a 5-game win streak for them. It's a 4-game win streak for the Panthers after a 3-2 OT win over Detroit. And the Rangers a 3-2 OT win over Buffalo. DA, back to you.
Thank you, Bogues. Pete the Body, let me know when we have Jeff Goodman good to go, because we will talk a little college basketball with him. But before we do that, was that Pete?
He's not there yet. He'll be there shortly.
Okay. So, Mraz, I got something to tell you. Yesterday, we went to, my dad and I, Papa Amendo, made a run to Bass Pro Shops because fishing season, trout season is now open. And next weekend, for his Christmas gift, I got us a weekend kind of upstate to go do some fishing. So him, myself, my brother, we're going to go up there and next weekend do some early season trout fishing. So yesterday we went to the Mecca Bass Pro Shops. And after we did the shopping, got a ton of stuff, ton of gear. We were so excited. It was awesome. Had to get some late dinner before we came home. So there was a Chipotle across the parking lot from the Cabela's / Bass Pro Shops. I said, Dad, you want to go get Chipotle? He goes, well, what is that? I said, well, it's like a burrito place. And yeah, my dad, not hip to the Chipotle thing. He's not a burrito guy. So I said, what's a burrito place? He goes, do they have anything else? I said, well, yeah, they have like tacos. He's like, anything else? I'm like, quesadillas? He goes, oh, yeah, I'll get a quesadilla. Okay. So we go in to Chipotle. I get my burrito bowl, double chicken, pinto beans, mild salsa, a little corn as well, a little cheese on top. Happy to do it. Good to go. My dad goes, I'll get a quesadilla. They go, well, that's an online order only. We're like, well, we're not going to walk outside to go order this and wait. She's like, yeah, sorry. It's online order only. But on the menu, it says there's a kid's menu quesadilla. So my dad says, well, can I get the kid's menu quesadilla? She goes, you want the kid's menu quesadilla? He's like, yeah. So he goes, does that come with all the other stuff like the rice and beans or the fruit cup? She's like, well, yeah. He goes, I don't want any of that. I just want the quesadilla. She goes, okay, it's only going to be like a tiny quesadilla. It's like the size of a taco shell. He gets two of them. So I walk out the burrito bowl. He walks out with only two mini cheese quesadillas. All it is a flour tortilla, mini, with cheese melted in the middle of it. He got two of them. So we're in the car driving home. He smashes both of them. I mean, gone in like 10 seconds. And he's like, you know, I went to Subway, asked for a cheese sandwich. They wouldn't do the cheese sandwich. Did I ever tell you that story? I'm like, yeah, Dad, you told me that story like 10 times. He has gone to Subway to try to get just a cheese sandwich. He just wants cheese on bread. They won't do it. They got to put meat on it. They won't do just a cheese sandwich. I said, did you tell Mraz this? He goes, I don't know if I've told Mraz this. I go, you got to tell Mraz this. So my dad How about that play? Too many quesadillas and would prefer just to get a cheese sandwich from Subway when he goes in there.
There's so much there that I can't believe we have Jeff Goodman coming up. Number one, DA, you just tackled what was about to be my Trash Tuesday next Tuesday.
Really?
2 days ago, I went through this issue at Chipotle, and you know I don't want to ever trash them over getting Danielle this quesadilla because it's mobile only, the new quesadilla, and I already ordered my order. And with nobody in the restaurant, they sat there and made me order on the phone in front of them to come to the mobile side to pick it up. I said,
what's the bit there? Is that because it takes that much longer to make the quesadilla than anything else?
It takes 45 seconds in the oven. The bit is trying to encourage mobile ordering. I said, I'm standing in front of you and I'm not holding up a line. It was a big argument. That was going to be my Trash Tuesday. Maybe I'll still hit it. Number two, your dad should have talked to me a long time ago. This is very simple. DA, there's a sandwich on the Subway menu called the Veggie Delight, which is meatless. No, and nowhere in the rule book does it say you have to get veggies in the Veggie Delight. It's cheese and vegetables. All he has to do is order the Veggie Delight. They start the sandwich. What kind of cheese do you want? All right, tell them the cheese, double it. Any veggies? You know what? I'm just going to hold off for the veggies. Leave the cheese. They charge you for a Veggie Delight. Some Subway restaurants probably get confused and don't realize how they're going to charge that sandwich.
Right,
it's a Veggie Delight.
That's exactly it. They wouldn't know how to run up just a cheese sandwich.
Because everything is just so with the even inventory. It's a Veggie Delight. That's what you ask for, and then hold the veggies.
Okay, my dad will be very happy to hear that. So I want to get your take on too many quesadillas, menu quesadillas, coming up here later on to the show. But standing by right now to talk a little college basketball with us, he's a longtime college basketball insider. He's an analyst for Stadium Sports. Also, he is a podcaster for the Field of 68 College Basketball Podcast. Joining us here on the show, my friend Jeff Goodman. Jeff, good morning. How you doing?
Oh, I'm good, my man. I'm good. It's been way too long. How are you?
I know. It's been too long. I've been great. I've been so enjoying this NCAA tournament. It's been so weird because we didn't have the brand names like Duke in it or like Kentucky. We didn't have the fans in it like we normally do. But we still had the magic of the NCAA tournament. And I think, did it feel like this to you? If the NCAA tournament can survive in advance without Kentucky, Duke, and fans, and in one site, one bubble, the tournament's always going to be pretty special.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, listen, I'm here in Indy, and I've been in, I don't know, I can't imagine anybody's been at more games than me. The only problem was they wouldn't let me bounce back and forth to 8 games in a day the first
first
weekend. Well, you could do it. I mean, you wouldn't make all of every game, but you could have pulled it off. And David Warlock, who I love at the NCAA, wouldn't let me do it. So, but I went to 4 games every day during the Sweet 16, and it's been awesome. I mean, it's been absolutely awesome. Not as good as normal, you know, with the atmosphere here in Indy being obviously not what it normally is, especially these days. Like right now, I would be going out, walking out of my residence in hotel room that I've been at for, 18 days, and you'd have a huge crowd outside walking around, fans, coaches, everybody here, and you don't have that environment, that atmosphere, but hopefully it's just a one-off. And we've had, like you said, pretty good games for the most part, and I just hope we get the game that we all want in the national title game that we've all wanted. I wanted it from a year ago now, which is Baylor, Gonzaga, the two best teams in the country going into the season, and hopefully we get that on Monday night.
Sounds like you feel like Baylor could give Gonzaga a game in that type of matchup.
I picked him to win it all before the season. I picked him to win it all before the tournament. I absolutely think Baylor can win that matchup.
Okay, so you're picking Baylor to win in a matchup against Gonzaga. How would they do it?
Well, listen, the more I watch Gonzaga, the more I feel like maybe I'm an idiot from picking them. But listen, how they can win it is they've got absolutely, like, terrific guards in Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler. They're both, you know, first-team All-American-type guards. Davion Mitchell is one of the best defenders you're ever going to see in college basketball. And they've got toughness up front. Like, Mark Vidal, I'm not saying he can hold Drew Timmy to 8 points, 10 points, but like he can hold him in check. He's tough. He's athletic. I just think Baylor's got enough, and they got shot makers. So they can play with Gonzaga if they want to trade buckets, but they're much better, in my opinion, defensively. and they weren't coming out of their pause. They had like a three-week pause, and they came out of that pause, and they just didn't look like themselves. And now their defense has started to look more and more like the Baylor defense that we thought was the best defense in the country early in the season.
Jeff Goodman is our guest this morning here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio. There's been a lot of hand-wringing over the health of this sport, and for good reason. I mean, you have the transfer portal wide open, meaning there's more change for players than ever before, and you have a college basketball landscape that's losing talent to the G League. You have kids that'll soon go directly to the NBA at some point in time, and a lot of people are wondering, well, can college basketball survive this? What do you see as the biggest challenge to college basketball in the coming years?
Listen, I think it's why Roy Williams retired yesterday. I really do. I believe it's the combination of things you just mentioned and then adding in name, image, likeness that forced Roy Williams to retire sooner than he would have liked and is going to force guys like Mike Krzyzewski and Jim Boeheim and some of those other older coaches to retire a little bit sooner than they would like because they're frustrated. Roy Williams, every time I saw him, he knew that I've compiled the transfer list for about 15 years. And when it started, the number was about 350. And this year, it's probably going to be closer to 2,000. And Roy was pretty much immune to the transfer portal and all the guys transferring out of programs until the last 2 years. And he would talk to me about it in the summer. There was a sense of pride for him. He was like, nobody leaves Carolina. Nobody leaves us. And the last couple of years, that's changed. So I think that's a big part of it for him is, you know, the investment he puts into these kids. And now whatever he invests, it doesn't matter. These kids, you know, if they're the second leading scorer on the team, they want to be the leading scorer. If they're a role guy, they want to be a starter. And, again, now you have it with this one-time transfer rule that's coming in here soon in a couple of weeks. And it's only going to get worse. I mean, it's only going to get worse. And I understand it for the kids. I do. I know Jay Billis and others have been pushing it for years. I totally get it that you want freedom for these kids and, you know, they shouldn't have to sit out. Well, the only problem with that is it's great for the kids, but it's going to kill our game. It's going to kill our game because the basketball is going to be so ugly with every roster having 7-8 guys turn over every single year. So, I think the sport's at a crossroads in a lot of ways. And it's going to be interesting to see how name, image, likeness, that's the biggest impact for me on the sport. But the transfers has gotten, it's now, I used to laugh at Seth Greenberg saying it was an epidemic. It's now an epidemic.
The transfer rule is going to change where you can have a one-time transfer and not sit out a year. So just boom, kind of college basketball free agency. So in terms of how it affected Roy Williams, the last couple of years have not been Roy Williams' UNC traditional powerhouse years. Was it because Roy's effectiveness was waning, or did you just find it to be two anomaly years and he could have been back next year and been competing for a Final Four?
Yeah, I think there's a few factors. You know, you were still dealing with some of the academic fraud scandal. Okay, so some of it a couple of years ago caught up with them, kind of like it's doing with Kansas right now. You know, the federal investigation didn't really affect Kansas, but now the NCAA investigation has, and you're seeing the talent go down. You know, to me, again, it doesn't happen right away. It takes a few years for it to impact because you're talking about some of these guys, you know, in the class of like Garrison Brooks, Sterling Manley, some of those bigs they took a kid from Alabama. I can't remember his name, but he transferred out. So they took some guys that really weren't good enough. So I think that's a big part of it still for Carolina. I still think Roy, listen, 2 days ago, Roy was calling recruits. So he wasn't like 100% sure on this, and he wants to leave it in good hands. It's going to be interesting, guys, to see who gets this next. Who gets this job? Because there aren't a lot of candidates that blow you away that are in the Carolina family. And, oh, by the way, the Carolina family is about as strong as any family in terms of former players. They want one of their own to be the next head coach, but you're talking Hubert Davis, you know, okay, maybe. He's been on a staff that really, again, like you just said, hasn't been great lately. And you got Wes Miller, who I love, but he's in a mid-major at UNC Greensboro. I would hire Wes Miller. I think he's very much like Roy Williams in a lot of ways. I've known Wes since he was 16 years old when he played at New Hampton Prep up in New Hampshire. I would go with Wes, but, you know, if you're Bubba Cunningham, the AD, and I asked him this, do you focus on the Carolina guys first, or do you swing at the big boys? Do you take a shot at Mark Few and Jay Wright and Tony Bennett and all the Chris Holtman? Like, again, the first three aren't taking that job, but, like, if you offer that job to Chris Holtman, yeah, he's got a significant buyout, but my guess is he's walking from Columbus, Ohio, to Chapel Hill for that job.
It's a really interesting question. Is the Chapel Hill faithful okay going to a mid-major to pluck their next head coach, even if he is a member of the UNC family, or do they want a bigger name from a bigger program? That's a huge question, Mark. And you guys were discussing this as part of the Field of 68 podcast. Excellent. You and Robbie Hummel were really breaking this down. And then also the Chris Beard situation. And at Texas Tech, there's hard feelings because they gave him a lot of money and they supported his program and they filled up that arena and they went to a national championship game in another Elite Eight. And now he's going to a rival in-state that looks down their nose at Texas Tech. I don't think there's any question he would take that job, but does Tech have a good reason to be a little resentful towards it?
Well, the one thing you failed to mention there is Texas is his alma mater, right?
Of course.
So, like, it's an easier sell that way, Damon. Like, I'm not sure if it matters in the grand scheme of things, whether it was his alma mater or not, he still would have taken Texas. But it's an easier sell to those that are pissed off at him in Lubbock of saying, hey, this is where I went to school. Now, ultimately, the reason he's going to take less money than he was offered at Texas Tech, because you can't pay your basketball coach in Texas more than your football coach, and your football coach is making $5.2 million. So he would have gotten more money to stay at Texas Tech. I'm convinced of that. But ultimately, Chris Beard is all about winning a championship. That he is absolutely motivated, obsessed with it. So in his opinion, he thinks he can do it easier at Texas. Now, I know you'll say to me, skeptic of, well, he got within a basket of winning the national title against Virginia a couple years ago at Texas Tech. True. But consistently, you can recruit better players at Texas than you can at Texas Tech. Consistently, in his mind, he's thinking, what could I do? I mean, think about this. What would Chris Beard have done with Shaka Smart's players this year? He would have competed for a national title.
No doubt. And it's always been one of the great vexing questions in college basketball history. Why can't anybody unlock Texas to be a perennial powerhouse each and every year? When you have NBA lottery picks just kind of streaming out of the Dallas-Fort Worth area every single season, it shouldn't be that hard for Chris Beard to build a perennial Big 12 champion in Austin, right?
Shouldn't. I mean, the question is how much do those fans care? They're supporting, they're pouring more resources into the basketball program, certainly. But I think it's winning. Like, I was at Texas years ago when Kevin Durant was there and Damian James and Avery Bradley and those guys were there. And they came out for those games. Now, are they there in the non-conference like some other programs that are basketball programs? No, they're not. But they're not at Florida. And Billy Donovan, last I checked, won two national titles. They're not at some other football schools. You know, I think Texas and Ohio State aren't that far off in terms of, like, again, their apathy for it early. And then if you're good, they'll buy in. They'll come in January once college football is over. But they're focused on college football, certainly in December and even the early part of January when they're still playing.
College basketball insider Jeff Goodman joins us here on the show. I thought your piece about Mike Woodson was really interesting. You can read it at watchstadium.com. And the headline is, sorry, Indiana, Mike Woodson is no Juwan Howard. You know, Mike Woodson has experience of the NBA, was an assistant coach there, was a head coach there. He's a member of the Indiana family, but you've met this hire with some major skepticism. Why?
Yeah, Indiana fans have gotten all over me for this one.
I'm sure.
Listen, Mike Woodson's 63. He's never coached a day in college. He takes over a program that is in way worse shape than what Juwan Howard inherited. He inherited a program from John Beilein that was in great shape. He inherited Xavier Simpson and John Teske and Isaiah Livers and Eli Brooks. So it was kind of up and running for him. The other thing is, do you think any kids in Indiana really know who Mike Woodson is before last week?
Hard to imagine.
Nobody did. Like, come on, nobody did. they know who Juwan Howard was when he got hired. And not only, you know, yes, Fab Five, they probably heard of him with a Fab Five, but ultimately it was still like he had a long NBA career. You know, he was with the Miami Heat, with LeBron. So I think there's a difference there. And the other thing, the other component is Juwan Howard, he hired a great staff. He kept Saadi Washington, who was his top recruiter and knows Michigan very, very well. He brought in Phil Martelli as a head coach to help him, who's been, you know, 25 years successful at St. Joe's. And then he brought Howard Osley from the NBA as kind of a developmental guy, but a guy who works. So he got a really good staff that were all very different. What is Mike Woodson going to do with his staff? That ultimately will probably determine his fate, Damon. But, you know, again, he's kept Kenya Hunter so far. Good move. Kenya knows a lot of people, well-liked. We'll see what he does with his final two staffs, you know, and he brought on Thad Matta, which I like in like a consulting role, but like Indiana fans are acting like Thad Matta is going to be Larry Shyatt for Billy Donovan years ago. He's not. He's a consultant. He's not going to be recruiting. He's not going to be around every day. He's helping him. He's helping him with some of the things that he needs help with because, frankly, he's 63 and he's never coached college basketball before.
Read all about the optimism that Jeff Goodman has about Mike Woodson in Bloomington at watchstadium.com.
You can Not a lot of it. And the track record, Damon, the track record of all these dudes, Chris Mullin, Mark Price, Clyde Drexler, it doesn't bode well. The odds are not in his favor. That's all.
Yep, it's bad. At Goodman Hoops, he's such a good follow, such a powerhouse around college basketball. Field of 68 is such a good college basketball podcast. Again, watchstadium.com, at Goodman Sports, and the Field of 68. Dude, it is so good to catch up. Let's do it again here soon. Thanks so much for finding time for us this morning, and enjoy the Final Four tomorrow.
Thanks, my man. Appreciate it. Glad you're well. We'll talk soon.
Back at you. Jeff Goodman joining us this morning on the show. Love, love, love our college basketball conversations. He's so good at this, and I'm glad that we were able to track him down before the Final Four. That was a great spot. When we come back here on the DA Show on a Target Demo Friday, should there be a Tom Brady rule part two? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Don't like something? Get it out.
It's not like going to Six Flags, DA. You could get rolled up on by a giraffe.
And what do you think a giraffe's going to do to you?
They're freaking tall. They can't stomp you. They're not Jeffrey at Toys R Us.
You've heard a lot of giraffe-on-human violence?
Well, no, because they don't survive to tell the tale.
Got it.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
To tell the tale. It's a Target Demo Friday on Twitter and on Facebook. Let us know where you are, how you're listening, and how you watched opening day of baseball yesterday, if you did. And I'll read those coming up here next hour on the show. The Rams won a new Tom Brady 2 rule. As you watch at watchda.com and see Mraz in an Easter Bunny mask, a giant smiling Easter Bunny mask. This is going to be difficult for me to get through this take as I watch a hideous, horrifying, oversized Easter Bunny.
Happy Easter!
In an Army Navy hoodie staring back at me.
Nice teeth.
Yeah, you look like Strahan before his stupid April Fool's Day joke. I never saw Easter Bunny with a gap in his teeth.
Well, a gapped Easter Bunny loves America's game, DA.
You know what? Screw Michael Strahan of that dopey April Fool's Day joke. We actually did the segment yesterday on the show about why he would do this. I thought that maybe he was going to try to become The Rock and get movie deals, etc. And the egg is on my face, but it's such a dumb April Fool's gag. I mean, I guess I fell for it only because it doesn't feel like you tricked anybody. It's an April Fool's gag. You just photoshopped you with no gap. I mean, is that really a gag or a joke or a prank? You didn't do it. The prank would be doing it. The prank is not, I didn't do it. Ha, ha, ha. I tricked you to thinking I would do it. What kind of prank is that, Mraz?
It's a terrible prank, D.A. First of all, you don't long play an April Fool's prank. The beauty of April Fool's
right.
is, to,
You make the joke on April Fool's, not on March 28th or 29th and wait for April 1st to come out for a big reveal.
Yeah.
It's stupid. And you let me down. I think it's a terrible joke, a terrible prank. Not fun.
Yeah. Like, the prank is on April 1st, you right. say, hey, look at this. I closed my gap, you know, and whatever. There's fake teeth in or you've got a Photoshop right. picture or something like that. You don't make the joke March 28th and then on April 1st say, ha ha, no joke. That's not how April Fool's Day works.
Terrible joke. Bad April Fool's Day.
So stupid. All right, I'll get to my Rams take coming up after the break about the Rams and Tom Brady and this rule change, as well as who the Tar Heels would go after for their head coaching job now that Roy retired. TA, CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.